Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Well, as the old saying goes, one swallow does not a summer make, but thousands of them certainly do. Around this time each year, large numbers of these long-distance migrants stream into Ireland from their African wintering quarters to nest in our barns, our sheds, our porches and our garages. They are beautiful to look at, supremely agile in flight and happy to share our buildings with us. All qualities that have helped to make them one of our favourite birds. On this special edition of Mooney Goes Wild, I'm joined by self-confessed swallow nuts Jim Wilson, Terry Flanagan, Eric Dempsey and Niall Hatch for an in-depth look into the lives of these fascinating creatures, including their migratory journeys, their unique adaptations, their foraging behaviour and their nesting habits. Now, when you see a bird as small and light as a swallow, it's hard to believe that they fly thousands of miles every year. But that's exactly what they do. And it's all in an attempt to avoid ever experiencing winter. Swallows are perhaps our most famous summer migrants, and those currently arriving back into Ireland have all just flown here directly from southern Africa. Eric Dempsey, we will start with you. You made a documentary about swallows some years ago for Mooney Goes Wild, titled From Egg to Africa. So you know all about that journey.
Oh, migration. I could speak for hours and hours and hours, Derek. It's my favourite subject. I remember when I was four or five, standing in the Botanic Gardens with my dad, and we were watching swallows swooping down on the ponds at the back of Botanic Gardens, taking a drink. And my dad saying, imagine these birds have come all the way from Africa. And here I am now, at the age of 60, looking at my swallows each spring and saying to myself, with that sort of same childlike sense of wonder, imagine these birds have come all the way from Africa. And that's exactly what they do. You think of a swallow, it's what, maybe 18 grams, which is about half the weight of a bag of Tato crisps. And the birds that you're seeing flying around the areas now have flown up to 10,000 kilometres to get here. They will have spent the winter in southern Africa, as far south as the Cape of Good Hope. And the mortality rate for young birds is very, very high. So perhaps 80 to 90% of the young birds that migrate in the autumn will not make it through their first year. So it's a very high mortality rate. But the birds that return are successful birds. Not only have they overwintered in South Africa, but they have returned on a 10,000 kilometre journey. And think of what that journey is. They will leave southern Africa, head along the northern and the western side of Africa, moving up over subtropical, tropical and equatorial Africa. They then cross back over the equator, heading north. They will then move again through tropical and subtropical Africa, and then they hit the Sahara Desert. Ahead of them, vastness spreading to the horizon. Now, many birds that migrate and do big sea journeys, for example, pack on fat reserves. They will shrink their organs to allow for fat reserves to be placed on their bodies. But swallows, they eat as they go. They don't undertake that same physiological change as some other migrant birds do. But they do need to stock up before they undertake that incredible journey. They head out across the Sahara Desert, perhaps 3 to 4 days flying. But in their head, they have a map. If they've been successful flying across it, they know the route back northwards. And that route may include small oases where they can drink, stop off and freshen up. If they successfully get across the Sahara Desert, our birds hang a left around the Atlas Mountains of Morocco. They then fly across the Mediterranean. Now, I have been in Mallorca many years ago, and we witnessed thousands upon thousands of swallows coming in off the sea over the Mediterranean. And they were exhausted. They had hit a northerly wind, and many birds must have been lost at sea. But we were picking swallows up off the road, to prevent them from being hit by cars. They were exhausted. Once they get into mainland Europe, the birds, our birds, will then move up along France and then fly out across the open Bay of Biscay and they reach Ireland. Now think about that. A little bird with a brain the size of a pea is able to find its way back to Ireland. But not only that. Once it reaches Ireland, it does something even more extraordinary. If it was born in Offaly or Westmeath or Wicklow or Dublin, not only does it come back to Ireland, it will come back to the same county it was born in. Not only that, if a swallow was born in my shed here in Newcastle in County Wicklow, that bird, if it survives, will return back to the same shed in which it was born. Males tend to come back to the same shed. Females tend to stay within a general area. They don't come back to the exact same shed. I've met a swallow, Derek, that was 10 years old and it had returned to the same barn 10 years in a row. Can you imagine that? This bird was capable of navigating across the entire globe to return back to the same barn that it was born in. And of course, the question is, how do they do that? I suppose I love the fact that we don't really know. We have a good idea. They use the stars. They have a genetic understanding of the stars at night. They watch the sun. They know east and west. But they have an invisible map in their brain. Birds that have flown south for the first time will take maybe 8 to 12 weeks to get to South Africa, because they keep stopping off to learn the way and take in all of the signs and the signals of that route. Coming back, it only takes them about 3 weeks to get back. They are able to recognise mountains and rivers. They are able to recognise countries. And once they get back to Ireland, they will recognise your local village, maybe your church steeple and your shed. It's also believed that birds like swallows are capable of seeing the magnetic fields of the earth. So these birds, as they fly low over the ground and low over the water, they are actually following a path that is invisible to us. The magnetic fields creating lines that these birds are able to understand. They're able to understand the height of the sun. These birds have been doing this for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years. And we're only beginning to get an understanding of it now. And if that doesn't blow your mind, nothing else will.
Well, it's extraordinary. Whatever about them making their way back to the barn or the shed in which they were born, Eric, it's the journey from Ireland to Africa in the first place. How do they get there? Are they following somebody? Because they were born in our barn in Ireland, and yet they go to Africa without ever having been there. That's what blows my mind, more than them returning.
I agree with you, Derek. That is the most extraordinary thing, because it's the young birds that leave Ireland. They will have never taken this journey before. But they are not shown. They're not like Brent geese that travel with the parents and the parents bring them to the exact spots where they should be feeding for the winter. Young birds move ahead of the adults. So if you have the first brood of young swallows, they will be fledged and gone and beginning to move south while you as adult swallows are having your second brood. And if you remember, Derek, some years ago, I did the wonderful documentary From Egg to Africa with yourself. Mm-hmm. When I went to South Africa in early November, I expected to see nothing but juvenile birds because they would have moved ahead of the adults. But what I was seeing were adult birds. And the South African birders explained to me that the adults arrive earlier. The juveniles, even though they have flown from Ireland ahead of the adults, are overtaken by the adults because the adults already know the way. They have the map in their brain. They've been there. They've done that. They know exactly what they're doing. The young birds, on the other hand, are much slower reaching South Africa because they are learning the route. But like, what drives them to this? Is it the shortening of the daylight hours? Is it the realization of lack of food? Is it something deep inside them, a primeval drive to migrate? When I was young, Derek, one of my ambitions was to speak Swallow. I would love to interview a Swallow. And at 60 years of age, I have a microphone in front of me, and as I'm speaking, there's two swallows flying up and down the fields just in front of my house. And I'd love to call them over and say, sorry, excuse me, do you mind me asking you a few questions? Like, how do you do it? And what I love is that we have all these theories, but truly, it's still a mystery. How can a young swallow know instinctively that it must fly south? And how does a young swallow know it must go to places like South Africa? Other birds like house martins, sand martins, they don't fly as far as Southern Africa. They stop short of that. Their journeys are a little bit shorter. So how do they do that? How do they know that? It's still the thing that captures the imagination.
Niall Hatch is at the East Coast Nature Reserve, not a million miles from where you are in Newcastle, Eric. Niall.
Yes, watching a couple of swallows myself flying over the reed beds here. It's a wonderful habitat for them. And it's a real privilege to know that those are birds that have just arrived in from Africa. As Eric was saying, it's mind-blowing that these birds can travel this distance. They can unerringly come back to the same location each year. That such a small creature can do it is amazing. I remember a few years ago, I was in the Pyrenees Mountains, exactly on the border between Spain and France, and high mountains. And even though it was the start of the summer, there was still snow and ice all over the place. And all of a sudden, two swallows came flying along the main road over past the border crossing, and they were literally flying just 1 centimetre above the road. What they were doing was trying to find the lowest crossing point across those mountains that they could. They were flying no higher than they absolutely needed to just get over those mountains and down the other side. So everything they do is just on a knife edge. They really are, they calibrated their weight and everything just to make sure they can just about make it without carrying any extra weight. And as Eric was saying, the mortality rate for the youngsters in particular is enormous, almost shocking that so many of them perish. It really is just survival of the fittest. Only the very best of the swallows get to breed and pass their genes on to the next generation. Now, it's only in relatively recent times that we've understood anything at all about bird migration. As recently as 300 or so years ago, it was widely believed that swallows actually hibernated dormant in mud at the bottom of lakes and ponds. People didn't realise they flew all the way to Africa. That probably seemed more fantastical than the fact that they might actually just sleep in the bottom of a lake. And it was a gentleman called Gilbert White, a very pioneering naturalist, who finally cracked it. What he did was he got some swallows and he put little coloured ribbons on their legs with water-soluble dye in them, and then he collected those same swallows the following year when they came back. He caught them again and he saw that there was still dye in the ribbons that hadn't been washed out, so he was able to conclude, well, those birds haven't been underwater, otherwise the dye wouldn't still be in the ribbons. He didn't know where they went to, he didn't know what they did, but he knew that they didn't sleep in lakes. And it might seem very basic and simple to us now, but that's how science finds things out. It's trial and error and building on top of knowledge. And back then, of course, people couldn't communicate with each other over long distances. We couldn't say to people in South Africa, have the swallows arrived yet? What's going on there? People had to find this out. But it really is a very recent thing that we understand migration, really. For most of human history, people had no idea what was going on.
And of course, Niall, there was fake news back then, because there was very reliable reports of fishermen dredging up swallows from the bottom of lakes and reporting it like as scientific fact. So fake news was part and parcel of the swallows game 300 or 400 years ago. But we welcome swallows back as the arrival of spring. And in South Africa, the returning swallows back there in our winter is also viewed by everyone in South Africa as the arrival of spring, because they, of course, are going to spend the South African summer down in South Africa while we perish here in wintertime. And of course, it's food driven. Migration is food driven, and also migration is all about having enough food to feed your young. If you can imagine that swallows are insect-eating birds, they need to be able to spend as much time in daylight hours rearing their young. So it's advantageous to them to move north into a place like Ireland. It allows these birds long daylight periods in which to find food and raise their young. And for that reason, some swallows can have 2, possibly 3 broods in one season. And if you look at the mortality rate, if you have a pair of swallows that can produce maybe 12 to 15 young, all that's required to maintain the population are 2 birds to survive. The real issue with swallows that we may be having at the moment is a lack of insects in Ireland, and that will impact the breeding success rate of swallows. And can you imagine if that population of insects fell to such a level that we had less and less swallows breeding successfully, therefore less and less swallows returning, and ultimately the birds may just disappear. That is, of course, the nightmare scenario. But swallow numbers are going down. A good friend of mine who keeps records of swallows from his barns over the last 30 years can see the number of fledged birds leaving his sheds reducing year on year on year over the last 10 to 15 years. And that is a real worry.
Well, as Eric has mentioned, the need to find large quantities of small flying insects, essentially a swallow's only source of food, dictates a great deal of how they live their lives. But how do they go about tackling such tricky prey? And what adaptations has the evolutionary process gifted them with in order to make the task easier? Niall Hatch, can you fill us in on what swallows actually swallow? And be careful not to bite off more than you can chew.
I'll do my best, Eric. So I'm here at Birdwatch Ireland's East Coast Nature Reserve in Newcastle in County Wicklow, just a little bit north of where Eric is at the moment. And I'm currently looking out over the extensive reed bed that we have here. It's a great habitat to see swallows at this time of year because it provides the food that they need. It's a great place for insects. The insects rise with any kind of sunshine at all. They come out of the reed beds. The swallows know this. They swoop over the top and they grab them. So right now I'm watching a pair of them doing exactly that. It's a great opportunity to actually see how they do it in real time. And the first thing I notice is that they're extremely agile. They can turn on a sixpence, they can spin around very quickly and chase any insect as soon as they spot one. And that's due to a couple of remarkable adaptations that they have. First of all, they have very pointed wingtips. And this is something that we associate with speed. Very often birds that have pointed wings are very, very fast. If you look at falcons, for example, especially the peregrine falcon, it's a very similar thing. It reduces drag at the wingtip and it helps them to be able to just cut through the air very, very rapidly while still providing quite a lot of thrust when they fly. But even more important than that for the swallow and its ability to be so agile is its forked tail. Now, famously, they have an incredibly forked tail, and the adults at this time of year have these wonderful long tail streamers that we can see coming off each corner of their tail. And that actually allows them to turn very quickly. It actually acts a bit like a brake in the air, so that when they sort of splay out their tail and twist it, they can turn around very, very rapidly. And this is something that we associate with many birds which tend to be very agile. Not necessarily quick, though. Some birds can be quite slow, and a forked tail will help them to turn when they're flying slowly as well. A bird like a red kite, a big bird of prey with a forked tail. Looks a bit like an oversized swallow in many respects. It has a similar strategy, even though the two species aren't related in any way. But they're both very agile and can turn very quickly. But what the swallow has, it has both of those. It has the wings for speed, has the tail for turning, which means that they're very good at twisting the air and chasing those insects. Now, the other major adaptation that swallows have to be able to hoover up those insects is a very large mouth. They have a tiny little beak, so if you see a swallow perched on a wire or maybe in its nest in your shed, you might think it hardly has any beak at all, because it doesn't need to have a long beak. It's not digging in the ground like a blackbird would to take out worms. It's not hammering on a tree like a woodpecker to extract beetle larvae that are in there. It's not like a crow that has to maybe go through tear flesh or go through roadkill or anything like that. It doesn't need that. So it doesn't need a long beak. What it needs, however, is a very wide mouth. And when they open their mouth, it's like this gaping chasm. And what they do when they're flying around, they leave that mouth open a lot of the time and they're just gulping up the insects. They go straight into their mouths. They don't even have to think about it much and they just swallow them automatically. And if it's a slightly bigger insect, what they do is they clamp their beak shut and they grab it. So sometimes you can actually hear them do that. If it's a very calm day, you can sometimes hear that little bill snap as they're catching the insects if you're very close to them. I can't hear it right now. Actually, because there's so many other birds singing. I have a grasshopper warbler singing beside me here. I have sedge warblers and willow warblers, and a little bit of breeze in the reeds
and
as well.
Aircraft flying overhead there, Niall.
Yes, another airborne creature that we get here are airplanes. Yeah, so just beside Newcastle Aerodrome, so you will hear some of those flying over occasionally. Doesn't seem to put the birds off, however. They seem very used to it at this stage. They just kind of ignore it. But the swallows, you know, it's a great opportunity to even compare the way swallows behave and airplanes behave, because the airplanes, they are far less flexible and agile in the air. When I'm watching those planes practicing takeoff and landing, which is what the pilots are doing right now as I'm watching them, they have to go in a big, big loop out over the Irish Sea and come back in. It takes them hundreds of metres to be able to make that turn. For a swallow, they can make that turn in the space of a couple of centimetres. They really are incredibly agile. And then, of course, their whole body shape is designed to help them pursue those insects in the air. They're very streamlined. They have slender bodies to reduce drag. And so it's really amazing that they can do this. And they're very good at detecting where those insects are as well. Their eyesight is better than ours, and they watch out for clouds of insects. They also watch for areas where there'll be heat spots from the sun, so they know that insects will be rising from there. And clearly these swallows near me here now have learned that these reed beds here at the East Coast Nature Reserve are a really good source of food for them. Because, of course, we know they've been here before. These are adult birds. There are no young swallows out yet. They haven't hatched from their eggs at this stage. And if some may have laid eggs at this stage, it's still very early days for the breeding season. But the fact is, these swallows, we know, must have nested somewhere near here last year, or indeed were perhaps raised in a nest nearby. Perhaps even in one of the nests that sometimes is built in one of our observation hides here, actually on the reserve. We sometimes have swallows nesting here right in those structures. We know that they're local birds here, and they come back here for food. And as Eric was saying there, the reason why birds migrate, it's because of food. If these swallows were to stay here for the whole winter, they would all die, because, or the vast majority would at least, because there just wouldn't be enough flying insects for them here. So from a survival point of view and from a strategy point of view, it makes sense for them to fly all the way to southern Africa, where they get that second summer and plenty of flies, even though most of the youngsters will die in the attempt, because their survival chances of flying down to Africa are better than if they stayed behind here. Now, with climate change, that may be starting to shift. We are getting more and more records each year of swallows that seem not to have bothered migrating at all. There's usually a handful of records from places like Cork and Kerry down in the southwest, which would traditionally be that little bit warmer than the rest of Ireland. And certainly when you go further south in Europe, there's several thousand swallows now in Spain and Portugal that aren't bothering to cross the Mediterranean and go into Africa. So it's still only a very small proportion of the European swallow population that isn't migrating to Africa any longer, but that proportion is increasing each year, and that's because the weather is now warm enough in the winter to support enough flying insects that those birds don't have to undertake that risk of going all the way to Africa. So staying behind is paying off for more and more of them. So it shows how important food is to everything that they do. Their whole lives revolve around it. And essentially, that's the reason why they migrate in the first place. They're not very flexible in their diet. That tends to happen, you know, with generalist birds. They would often stay with us year round. So birds like crows and blackbirds, robins, they have a wide diet. If one source of food disappears, they can switch to another one. So for the blackbird, for example, during the summer, they love to eat worms. But in the winter, they can switch very easily to feeding on berries, and they become much more vegetarian at that point. Swallows don't have that option. They only eat small flying insects and nothing else, so they have no choice but to go to where the insects are, hence the migration and the risks that they put themselves through.
I'm not surprised there's a lack of insects. We've discussed it many times on the programme, but can I just say anecdotally that when I was driving to and from Cork last weekend for the Dawn Chorus, that my car registration plate was splattered by insects, and I haven't seen that for a long time.
I found the same thing, actually, Derek. The car was covered, and I really remarked on it, because it's been a long time since I've seen that. And I remember when I was a kid, you wouldn't remark on that because it was an everyday occurrence, and it just isn't anymore. And those insects, of course, are swallow food. And we're seeing, because of changes in the landscape, not just because of climate change, but also intensification of agriculture, pollution, other factors like that, destruction of hedgerows as well, that are obviously the places where these insects themselves breed and produce their young. This is reducing the amount of food available for swallows, and indeed many other insect-eating birds like willow warblers and chiffchaffs and swifts. In fact, many of these trans-Saharan migrants, which are insect eaters, they are declining all across Europe because of the crisis we have now with the collapse of insect populations. So it is quite a fraught time for them. And as Eric was saying, fewer and fewer of the young birds are surviving each year, and that's not sustainable. Swallows already live their lives on a knife edge. They, you know, most don't survive the migration as it is, but now we're making it even worse and even harder for them to find food when they are here, which reduces their breeding success, reduces the fitness of those youngsters that have, you know, just amazing to think that some of them aren't even laid yet. They're not even eggs at this stage, and yet in a few months' time they'll be en route to Africa. It's really mind-blowing. But if they're not fully up to speed, if they don't have enough nutrition in their bodies, if their muscle mass hasn't developed properly, fewer and fewer of them will survive, and that really is a very sobering thought.
We spoke about the old sort of tales of swallows, you know, spending the winter in mud. But early observations, there's the old wives' tale that it's going to rain if the swallows are flying low. And there's a bit of truth in that, because insects will move higher and lower depending on air pressure. And if the pressure is high, which is good weather, a lot of the insects will be flying quite high. And on warm summer evenings, you will see swallows flying hundreds of metres above the ground. But if it's going to rain, the air pressure sinks And with that, so does the number of insects. They're flying lower. So there's truth in the old wives' tale that it's going to rain if you see the swallows flying low. But it's also, you spoke about birds wintering in Ireland, and I saw several very late swallows last year. It was like into December. They were down in Wexford. And I noticed that those birds were young birds. And I wondered, were they young birds that were very late broods of swallows? Because we had a very warm period in late September, October. So perhaps some of these birds, it was simply too late for them to migrate. It is interesting that we now have an almost permanent presence of swallows in southern Europe. They are resident now. So it may well be a slight change, but all it takes is for a really hard winter in southern Europe to knock that population out in winter. It's, you know, these birds are on the threshold. These birds are pushing the threshold out for the species by overwintering in places like Portugal and Spain.
Niall, you mentioned earlier that you noticed swallows flying just a couple of centimetres above the ground, but I'm wondering what speed they can fly at. I have seen records of between 50 and 60 kilometres per hour. That's fast.
Oh, so that's right. They're very rapid in flight. Not as fast maybe as a swift, but still very, very fast. And that's the pointed wings that help them to do that. Then strong flight muscles as well. But they can fly extremely low, and they're very good at avoiding collisions as well. So you can see them swooping even just a centimetre above the ground, or very often you'll see them swooping above the water as well. And they do that because often insects will emerge from the water and they'll feed on those. But they also do that to drink. And you'll sometimes see them have such aerial control that they'll fly down over a patch of water, maybe a pond or a river or a stream, and they'll just clip it with the lower mandible of their beak, and it'll scoop up a little mouthful of water and then take off again. So that's how sophisticated their flying abilities are. They're very, very agile. They can fly literally just millimetres above the ground or above the water without colliding with it. There's very few birds that are agile enough to do that. A bird like a robin or a blackbird or even a crow, they're good flyers, but they're nowhere near agile enough to be able to pull that off. The swallows, for them, it's easy.
Now, when I was a child, I was always told that if you see a bird that looks like a swallow and it's evening time, it's a swift. And if you see a bird that looks like a swift and it's daytime, it's a swallow. So can you help me, please?
Well, that's not necessarily true. You will see them both at every time of the day. A great way to tell them apart, though, if you can't see them very well, is to see how they're behaving. If you see birds perched on a wire or on the ground, indeed, you can be absolutely certain that they're not swifts, because they're just not capable of doing that. Swallows do it routinely, as indeed do their close relatives in the swallow family, the house martin and the sand martin, which actually a couple of those are flying around me now at the moment as well. They're fellow members of the swallow family, and they perch perfectly well on wires and on the ground. Swifts will never ever do that. Swifts are also considerably larger than swallows. That's hard to judge when you see them in the distance or the high up in the sky, but when you see them side by side, you can see that the swift's about twice the size of a swallow, a substantially larger bird. But crucially, the swift is also all dark. From most distances, it looks completely jet black. Up close, it's more of a very, very dark, sooty, brownish grey colour, but from any other distance, it looks black. Whereas the swallow isn't black at all. When you see it from above, it may look black, but in good light, you actually see that the back and the head, they're actually a wonderful dark glossy blue colour. They shine in the lights. It's a really unique colour in nature. You don't really see those kind of dark, dark glossy blues really anywhere else. But below, they're much brighter. They have a white chest and white belly, but then they have a little dark blue-black band across their chest, and then their face and their throat is a lovely red colour. So that's something that you wouldn't see on a swallow, or indeed on a house martin or a sand martin. So that's a good way to tell them apart. And probably the best way of all, especially this time of year when you're looking at the adults, is to look for those tail streamers. None of our other birds, especially the ones with forked tails, have these long streamers looking like needles coming off the end of their tails. Now, later in the summer, that's a bit harder to judge, because only the adult swallows have that. The youngsters don't. So when they leave the nest and head off on their first migration to Africa, they have shorter tails without those long tail streamers. But at this time of year, it's easy. Those tail streamers are quite visible.
And the collective noun for group of swallows, is it true that it's a gulp of swallows?
I've heard that, yes. A lot of those collective names, they were just invented by Victorian authors, so there's actually no real provenance to them. But a gulp of swallows would be a perfect name for it.
Sounds appropriate, because they're gulping down the food, aren't they?
Absolutely. And those big mouths, I can see how that would think, you know, that they could only eat by gulping. So yeah, that's exactly what they do.
So a gulp of swallows it is. Thank you, Eric and Niall. Stay with us, if you will, because the extreme efforts that swallows expend in flying such long distances and obtaining food are ultimately endured for one purpose.
making more swallows. It takes two to tango, as they say, and courtship, mating, nesting, egg-laying, incubation and chick-rearing are the overriding preoccupations of these remarkable little birds at this time of year. It's all about ensuring that enough youngsters survive, as Eric said, to breeding age, eventually to replace their parents in the population. Jim Wilson, you've been peeking into the very serious business of swallow breeding behaviour on our behalf. I hope you asked their permission first.
Oh, Derek, yes, I hope I've been given permission. The swallows don't seem to mind me too much, but I'm here in the Great Island in Cork Harbour. I'm up on the shoulder of one of the large red sandstone ridges that runs through this part of Cork. And I've come to an old barn that was the family home originally of the Moorys. This is Claire and Paul Moorey. And they're surrounded by farmland. And it's a beautiful views out over the harbour. And this is ideal swallow breeding territory. And I have come to the right place because as I speak to you, I'm just inside the door of the barn. And down the other end, there's a pair of swallows coming and going, building their nest. Now, at this time, you don't get so much noise out of them because they haven't any chicks yet. They're not coming and going with the feeding. At the moment, they've established their pair bond and now they're getting on with the construction of the nest.
Now, what I want to know is how do they actually find a mate, given that listening to Niall and Eric, we've discovered how much time they spend on the wing looking for insects and the fact that they fly so fast, up to 60 kilometres per hour. How can they even catch the attention of another bird?
Well, I suppose, you know, just like every creature, you know, where there's a will, there's a way, you know, and they have the urge to breed. And I mean, they've great eyesight, you know. I mean, they're hoovering up all these insects as they fly around. And so they also are able to see other swallows. And in fact, when it comes to picking a mate, scientists have discovered that things like the brightness of the colour of the throat, the length of the tail, forked tail feathers, the outer tail feathers on the male, and even if they're the same length or asymmetric, all these details apparently feed into how the female chooses a partner. So they do all that while flying around. It's no different to us, you know. If an alien was looking into a dance hall, they'd probably say, "How the hell does anybody find a partner in that crowd?" And yet, we do. So it's the same for swallows and they do it all on the wing. Of course, their average lifespan, you know, is very short. So they don't hang about. If the mate from last year is there, well and good. But, you know, the biological clock is ticking. If the mate doesn't turn up, they'll go find another mate.
Now, tell me about the nest they build, if you would, please, and exactly how they position it.
The nest is incredible. Originally, swallows were nesting in caves. But thanks to human engineering, and we started building houses and barns, with gaps in them, these swallows said, these are pretty cool looking caves. And so they went inside, because you may remember in old farm buildings in particular, and barns and outhouses, they often left a gap at the top. Normally to leave some light in, it wasn't specifically for the swallows, but the swallows saw this as a cave, and in they went, and then there was lots of ledges, there was rafters and beams and things like that, and they said, wow, this is much better than a cave. And in fact, now almost all swallows nest on human-made structures. And so they come in, and then actually the construction is out of mud. They go off and they find damp, muddy puddles and they land there and they pick up mouthfuls of the mud and they come back and they literally pat them on together. Initially, they make a little ledge so that they can stand on it. And then once that is on, and of course, the mud dries out and goes hard, a bit like pottery. And then they can stand on that ledge. It's like a crescent. And then they continually add more and more till they build up a quarter of a sphere, like a cup, and it's glued to the rafter, and in many ways it's suspended. Sometimes there's a little lip that gives it support, and eventually they do that over a period. From scratch, they reckon between 6 and 12 days, they've got the nest completed. That includes putting straw inside and feathers then to line the nest before the eggs are laid.
And are they both building it, male and female?
Absolutely. The female tends to be the supervisor and the one in charge, but both of them do the building because she's going to do most of the sitting on the eggs. The male does very little. So she wants to make sure it's bloody good for her. So she has the final say as to how it turns out.
And in terms of eggs, how many will they lay?
Yeah, it varies. Records suggest anything between 2 and 7. But here in Ireland, the average is roughly about 3 or 4 per brood. So that's how many they lay. They lay them early in the morning, usually just around dawn, for an hour or two after that. That's when they lay the eggs. They lay one a day. And then once they're finished with the egg laying, that's when they start incubating them.
And tell me about that. How long does that go on for?
Well, the incubation then is roughly 15 to 17 days. And it's, as I mentioned already, it's normally done by the female, but the male will also help with that. And the idea of the incubation, it's a bit like, you know, when humans become pregnant, it's all inside. So the developing baby is kept warm and fed. And with the egg situation, well, it's outside. So the birds have to actually provide that heat. And what the female does is she drops all the feathers on her stomach and underside. Therefore, her skin, which is at body temperature, can lie right up against those eggs and give them the heat they need. And of course, to avoid becoming hard-boiled on one side and not done on the other, they roll the eggs to distribute the heat and allow the chick to develop in the egg.
So the chick is hatched out and it needs to be fed. So now I know from looking at the blue tits in my garden, the male and the female, the parents were coming and going constantly. I think up to 1,000 or more times per day with food parcels to feed the chicks. What does the swallow do? How many times does an adult swallow have to feed the chicks in the nest? What does it bring in?
Well, I mean, you see them coming and going sometimes at when they've got a full clutch of 3 or 4 very hungry chicks. The birds are coming and going constantly. Every few minutes, you know, 5 minutes or so, they're coming in and out. But on average, each swallow will collect roughly 60 insects an hour. OK, because they're unlike the blue tits, often they're going for slightly bigger. It's almost always flies. Definitely flying insects. And by the way, with I think approximately 500,000 pairs in Ireland, here from mid-April to mid-September, catching 60 insects each an hour during the day, they are hoovering up an enormous number of insects. They are doing an amazing job in keeping our environment good enough for us to live in. And they keep doing that all the time, feeding, feeding, feeding. What's also interesting is other adults sometimes will start feeding somebody else's young.
Why?
These are unpaired adults, and they're not 100% sure why, but they have found that this happens. Also, swallows can have 2 families and sometimes even 3 families a year. And believe it or not, the young that have fledged from the first brood, some of them help the parents raise the second brood. It's crazy, but they really are not 100% sure why that happens. But I presume the thing is these adults have an urge, you know, to breed. And if they're not able to breed themselves, they feel they help out. Another thing, by the way, to do with swallows is that the male thinks all the kids are his. Well, sometimes 1 or 2 are not his.
Oh, dear.
But he doesn't really know. So the female is more interested in maximising a healthy big brood, and the male thinks they're all his. But sure, look, that's the way life goes for swallows.
So you spoke to Claire Morey, I believe, Jim.
I did. Claire happened to be here. As I say, they were really kind to let me in. And I asked her what her observations of the swallows are, because she, like so many people living on farms, and farms is mainly where the swallows breed. She is the monitor of how well swallows are doing. And this is where we get an awful lot of our information over years and years and years, because they are on site every day watching their swallows come and go. So I asked Claire about her thoughts on the swallows that come to her barn here on Great Island in Cork Harbour.
As long as we've lived here, there's been swallows here, and probably generations before us.
Right. You're telling me earlier that the building here, the farm, has been in the family in one way or the other for quite some time?
Quite, about five generations, we think. Wow. Yeah, but obviously we're the first to own it.
Yeah. And it's structurally, it's pretty much the same, is it?
Completely same,
right. Because at the moment now we're in a stone, it's like a barn or a shed. It's quite big.
It was the original house, the dwelling house, until they built the other house.
Okay. All right, okay. Very good. So this would have been the original home.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then converted.
Yes.
Right. And of course, the reason we're here today is you've got swallows.
We do.
Do they come every year?
They come every year. And we have to open the windows to let them in.
Really?
Yes.
So you actually leave the window open specially for them?
Yes, we had replaced the round window in the barn, but it had to be taken down because they decided they wanted to get back in. So it had to be done.
And they came back in?
And they came back in, yeah.
Wow. So what do you think of the swallows yourself?
I love them. Absolutely love seeing them come back. There's great excitement as to who's the first to see the first swallow come back into the barn, and then the text goes out. Yeah, they're back.
And rough idea, do they come back roughly the same time every year?
Yeah, they do actually. But I think they're getting earlier.
Really?
Maybe, yeah. A couple of weeks earlier.
So what would be a date?
April, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're on the lookout in April
Very
for them.
Good. Yeah. And how long will they be with you?
Well, they'll be here for the summer.
Yeah, and they'll
leave? About September.
September.
Yeah. Hate to see them going, but sure.
Wow. And have you noticed if the numbers have changed over the years?
The numbers have gone down, definitely. Oh. I think they have. Yeah.
Right. So how many would you have had, we'd say, at the highest, roughly? How many pairs?
Couldn't even warrant a guess. I'd say 8 pairs easily.
Wow.
Upstairs and downstairs.
Here in this building?
In this barn. But this year, just downstairs.
Just downstairs. Yeah. And you've got, looks like, is it one or two? Or
I'd say we've 2 couples.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's incredible. And of course, you've got the kids here, so they've been used to them as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Part of the family.
Probably sick of us talking about them, but yeah, love them.
And they don't cause too much of a mess or anything like that.
Well, they do cause a mess. Let's face it. But I love the chirping.
Yeah.
I love the sound they make. It's lovely. Yeah.
So kind of, it's something to look forward to.
Oh, it's lovely. Yeah. It's part of the summer. You know, the summer's coming when they arrive. Do you know? Yeah.
Excellent, Claire. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much indeed to Claire and to Jim Wilson in Cork. Now, we've been talking a lot about where swallows go, how long they live and how they faithfully return to the same nesting sites year after year. But how on earth do we know these things? Is it merely guesswork? No, not a bit of it. It all comes down to the efforts of thousands of dedicated and highly trained bird ringers who safely catch these small birds, weigh them, measure them, and affix tiny metal rings to their little legs. Each ring is inscribed with a unique combination of letters and numbers, which means that whenever a ringed swallow is found again, either alive or dead, we can piece together its life history. Terry Flanagan is on hand in Dublin 15 to explain how it all works. Terry, in the immortal words of Beyonce, if you liked it, then you should have put a ring on it.
Well, I don't know anything about Beyonce, Derek, but I can talk to you a little bit about ringing. And ringing began with a Danish man, a guy called Mortensen, a school teacher of all things. And he wanted to know, because he was watching all the birds flying around him, and he wanted to know where they flew to and how long they lived. And an interesting thing that he wanted to find out too was the percentage of males versus females. So it took him a number of years to perfect this technique. He developed these metal rings and he put the metal rings onto the bird's legs.
Yeah.
Now, nowadays, these rings, they're generally all aluminium and they're light and they're harmless. But sometimes you might see some birds that have coloured plastic rings. And scientists who are generally doing research on individual species or that in a particular area, they may put these coloured, what are called Darvik rings, on the bird's legs. They're easier to see and they can use different colours for different years, so it gives them a lot of information. Now, we get lots of information from ringing birds. For instance, the oldest ring bird is a Manx shearwater and it's over 50 years old. And between the UK and Ireland, there are over 3,000 registered ringers, and they're ringing over a million birds every year. But it's not just about putting a ring on a bird. What's more interesting is when a ring is recovered on a bird. Anyway, two of Ireland's most recognised bird ringers are Declan and Paddy Manley, and they've been ringing birds, including swallows, on their land just outside Edenderry in County Offaly. And now that the swallows have recently arrived back in Ireland, Declan was keen to see what birds would use his shed this year. Would it be the pair that was there last year, or would it be a new pair? So late last week, I headed down to Edenderry to find out more.
Okay, sure, we can head in now and check the net to see if the swallows have come back in, if we had any luck and have caught them or not. Ah, we did. We actually caught both of them.
Oh, yeah. So both parents are here now.
The male and the female. The one on the left has the longer streamers. I'm assuming that's the male. And then the one on the right is a bit shorter looking. It's probably the female.
So they're very, very quiet in
oh,
the
yeah,
net.
Yeah. Once they get caught, they just kind of sit there. I just have to let down the net a little bit.
Well, I'm just going to move back a little bit out of the way. I'm just going to watch you more than anything else. So you're releasing the net. You're bringing the net.
Just lowering it down that we can reach the birds to extract them from it.
So you've got one, and Patrick has got
has
one.
Got the other one, yeah.
And they come out very, very easy.
They can come out quite easy.
Oh, I can see
and
now.
This one doesn't have a ring on it, so it's not the one from last year.
And this one, Patrick?
And this one has a ring, yeah.
So we've got two birds, so one of these was ringed. We can check that to see.
We check, if it's one of my rings, you know, we'll know whether it's the... Chances are it is one that was ringed from here.
So what? Where to now?
I'll go up there. All the ringing stuff is in the van up here, just at the top of the field. So we can check everything then. We just measure them and weigh them and let them off again. And then, the net will be gone out of the shed. So they'll just go back in the next 10 or 15 minutes and they'll be fine. They'll be happy enough. You know. Like, every year I catch them and, you know, sort of ring them, and then I can check if it's the same ones coming back or not. So it's interesting that it's normally the males that come back and take over the territory. You know, so the male from last year didn't survive, and we've a new male this year.
And it'll be interesting to see then if this ringed bird is one that you've ringed, number one, and is it one that was here in this particular nest last year?
Yeah, possibly it isn't now. You know, I mean, we'll know when we obviously read the numbers. Well, we don't read the number if it's one of mine, then I'll have to look it up in the book from last year to see if it's the same one. It could be one I ringed in a shed, you know, half a mile away either. That's always a possibility. But that's the whole thing with ringing, you know, you're identifying an individual, you know, so you can know for sure. Because often people will say, you know, there's been swallows here for the last 20 years, you know, the same two come back every year, but it's not the same two. Like, you know, you can say, I hate to disappoint you, but they don't really live that long.
So we're here now at the van, so this is your workstation.
This is the ringing gear. So,
do you have any problems with swallows as distinct from other birds when you're ringing them?
No, less problems with swallows than any other bird, I'd say, you know, because they're very plastic, they're easy to get out of the net. Some birds get tangled up in the net. If it's a cold morning, it's hard to get them out, and if they haven't fed. But I suppose with swallows, you're doing it in the summer, the weather's good, and that, you know, they're you have very little problems with them.
Yeah, so the ring number on this one is ALL1459. So I'll just repeat that to be sure. ALL1459.
And that's recorded as just swallow, and the R is for retrap. That's right, I'm putting the R beside the name.
And do you take any measurements now?
We'll take all the measurements as well, the same as we did. Like,
So the wing length first.
The wing length first is 126 millimeters.
That's actually longer than the male was, you know. So it obviously implies it's maybe an older bird, like. So.
And next is the tail. So this streamer is 39 millimetres.
39.
22.7.
And that's a little bit heavier than the male
heavier,
as well.
Yeah, because she's now, obviously in better condition.
Or carrying
for
eggs, maybe?
Carrying eggs and getting into breeding condition.
Maybe even have eggs.
And have, yeah, she could have eggs in her. She should be still laying. But the male then is obviously, he's defending the territory. So he's doing more flying around and using up more energy. And
he's doing the work.
He's doing more work, yeah. Where she's busy feeding and getting into breeding condition.
Yeah.
So that's all.
Can we have a quick look just back to see?
I'm actually just flicking back here through the pages. And there we go. Swallow, 4F, BP, 125, 18.9, 7 o'clock in the evening. Tail was 40. And Gill's Old House, which is the gate lodge there, is Gill's Old House.
So it's come back to the very same spot.
One, yeah. And that was on the 27th of June, the 6th. So it was obviously a bit later catching them last year.
So that's last year's bird that was last who year's nested bird, here
yeah.
last year.
Yeah, she was ringed last year, so she hadn't been here the previous year. So that's her back in the same shed, in the same nest.
And the only way we can tell that is by the ringing.
The same person. That's it. So that's her. So
I suppose you want to get this little one back up in the air again and back into the nest?
Yeah, we'll send her off as quickly as we can because from her brood patch we know she's sitting on eggs, so we don't want to keep her from it.
Straight down, gone straight down. You could see a little call from her there as she was leaving, but beautiful.
Yep, so she's just on her way down back down to the shed now, so she'll sit back down on her eggs and she'll be happy enough.
So even though ringing has been taking place for well over 100 years now, both in England and in Ireland, and literally millions of birds have been ringed in that time, we're still getting more and more information all the time, despite the fact that with all this new technology, all this radio telemetry and all of these stuff that they can put in their backs, we're still getting lots of really good information from ringing.
Oh yeah, it's always useful. Yeah, you're always getting useful information. Obviously now with more technology, you can get more information on the one bird. Like if you put a satellite tag, now the swallows are a bit small to do it, when you put a satellite tag on a bird, you can know exactly where they've been. Like obviously this bird went to South Africa and came back to here, but I don't really know where it went, how it went, you know, did it go down like through Spain, did it go down through Portugal, did it, you know, you kind of assuming
you know it got there,
but you know it got there and it got back,
it got back, you see.
Yeah. But I mean, if another ringer would say caught that in Gibraltar or somewhere, then you know you'd know when it went through Spain or different. You know, you can pick up other information that way. So obviously, the more birds you catch with rings on them, the more information you can get. Now, most of the birds that are got are found dead. Maybe people pick them up and they see a ring and they report it. You know, but quite a lot would be re-caught by other ringers or like that. Like I'm re-catching these birds myself. You know, so.
It must give you great pleasure to think that all the time and effort you've put into ringing birds, this particular bird, it's gone to Africa. It spent the winter there. It's come back here, right to the very same shed.
Exactly, the very same shed. Yeah, it's amazing. Like, you know, I go to Dublin and I get lost, even getting directions or with the Google Maps, and I still get lost. This little bird can go all that distance and back and I end up in the same shed.
Thanks indeed to Declan Manley and Terry Flanagan. Eric, you wanted to say something there listening?
Yeah, I was just thinking about like birds, like swallows going into dark sheds, and a lot of them are really old, dark, dark sheds. And yet a swallow is able to fly around in bright sunlight and suddenly swoop in to a pitch black shed and find exactly where the nest is and the young is. And that is an ability which is yet one more wonderful feature of swallows.
Thank you, Eric, Niall, Jim and Terry. So, as you've heard, there is much more to swallows than first meets the eye. One of the most successful widespread bird species on the planet. They provide us with a direct connection with other continents, other hemispheres even, and inspire us with their resilience, their tenacity, and their beauty. That a creature weighing no more than 20 grams can conquer the world is truly remarkable. And they are more than deserving of the special place that they have in our hearts. One swallow may not a summer make, but it makes so much more. Until next time, goodbye.
And Mooney Goes Wild was presented and produced by Derek Mooney.